You're listening to an episode of a Wondery Plus exclusive series. To continue listening, join Wondery Plus and enjoy ad-free listening to over 40,000 episodes, early access to your favorite podcasts, and more. Find Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
It's the fall of 1998 in a suburb west of London. An international pop icon sits on a grimy sofa in a small recording studio. The light is low, and there's a faint scent of stale beer and cigarettes. She drinks tap water out of a glass she filled herself. This isn't her normal scene, but her recording career is in a major slump. She hasn't had a number one song in 25 years. Her last album, a collection of power ballads, went nowhere. She needs a hit. The song she's been working on is good. Everyone's told her that. But deep down, she knows it's still missing that special something. The thing that can take her song from good to great. Which is why she's here. The two producers who run the studio, Mark Taylor and Brian Rawling, are still wet behind the ears, but they're willing to experiment. She watches them hunch over the mixing board, setting up. Mark, did you add that effect I liked off the Rochford CD? That vocal thing? Yep, and I think we found a way to do something similar. It's different, but how different? Well, let's see what you think. Taylor swallows hard and spins back to the mixing board. If this doesn't work, he's probably out of a job. But if this song is the hit he thinks it is, it's going to change their lives. He reaches across the board and punches play. Cher jolts to attention, like she's been hit with a cattle prod. Her eyes are wide, but so is her grin. That's it! That's the sound! But then she turns to Taylor and points a well-manicured finger in his face. The record labels are going to fight us on this. They hate experimentation. But if you let anyone touch this track, I'll rip your throat out. Taylor follows the diva's orders. The mix remains as it is, and so does his throat. Believe will go on to top the international charts. It will revive Cher's career. And, far from fighting it, the record labels will queue up to copy Cher's effect. The real fight is what happens next, when a little software plugin becomes a household name. And that name becomes synonymous with the battle for the soul of modern music. This is the story of Auto-Tune.
If I asked you how many subscriptions you have, would you be able to list all of them and how much you're paying? If you would have asked me this question before I started using Rocket Money, I would have said yes. But let me tell you, I would have been so wrong. I can't believe how many I had and all the money I was wasting. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
From Wondery, I'm Stephen Johnson, and this is American Innovations. Long before Auto-Tune hit the scene, studios were already experimenting with ways to alter the human voice. In 1939, a device called the Sonovox was invented and picked up by bandleader Kay Kaiser.
Tonight we present a new miracle of electricity, the Sonovox. Harry Babbitt, using special Sonovox units, gives diction to the tones of the instruments as they play. Harry forms the words, but the instruments sing them. Sing it, Saxes!
I know you anywhere.
3 years later, musician Alvino Ray invented a similar effect with the Talkbox. Ray dressed up his Talkbox as a guitar-shaped puppet named Stringy. The guitar's sound was routed through a carbon microphone and shaped into vocals by Ray's wife, standing off stage.
I am the spirit of the St. Louis Blues. I am so
blue. In 1958, the animated trio The Chipmunks took the Christmas song to number one. Despite rumors at the time, the magic ingredient wasn't helium, just the studio magic of speeding up the tape. 3 decades after the fever dream vocals of Stringy, the Talkbox was revived with a new update. Peter Frampton played his guitar filtered through a length of transparent tubing stuck in his mouth, allowing him to shape the sounds of his guitar. His 1976 release, Frampton Comes Alive, was drenched in the ear-catching wah-wah sound. It pushed the double album to platinum status 8 times over. Influenced by Frampton's sound, the early 80s funk pioneer Roger Troutman adopted the Talkbox and made it his own with hits like I Heard It Through the Grapevine. But no vocal effect has ever had the impact of autotune. Since it was invented in 1997 by Dr. Andy Hildebrand, it's gone on to be used in 99% of all number one hits. But with success came controversy. In 2010, Time magazine ranked autotune among asbestos, Agent Orange, and DDT as one of the 50 worst inventions of the 20th century. Rarely has any innovation in any field been so successful and yet so despised. It's 1962. Voices like Ray Charles, Sam Cooke, Patsy Cline, and Elvis Presley ride the Billboard Hot 100 charts. These artists sing with unique style and idiosyncratic phrasing. Their voices are filled with human feeling, and they are by no means pitch perfect. They bend notes and warp tones at will, sometimes edging into sharpness, sometimes sliding towards flatness. These intentionally imperfect, in-between pitches are known as blue notes, born out of blues and jazz singing. But 16-year-old Andy Hildebrand isn't paying attention to any of this. He's busy falling in love with classical flute. Hildebrand is still decades away from accusations of single-handedly corrupting the sanctity of human song and leaving it as cold as science. The fact is, he has nothing against the music of the day, particularly Patsy Cline's lush vocals. He appreciates those talents. He has good ears. But what he's really into is the hit parade of the previous 300 years. Masters like Bach, Mozart, and Debussy. By the time he's old enough to drive, he's a member of the Jacksonville Symphony Orchestra and a card-carrying union session player in local recording studios. Hildebrand has never been much of a student. He's fond of saying he failed first grade. But by the end of high school, he's developed a passion for science, along with his love for symphonic music. One feeds the other. With music scholarships paying the bills, he gets a degree in system science from Michigan State University and a PhD in electrical engineering, specializing in signal processing from the University of Illinois. It's the first unlikely step toward autotune. It's 1976, and Hildebrand is an engineer with Exxon.
Energy for a stronger America.
Hildebrand's job is to find oil deposits deep beneath the Earth's surface. He's good at it. And after 3 years with the company, his boss calls him into his office. Hildebrand's thinking, it must be good news. Not quite. His boss tells Andy that they're moving him to Alaska. The company is building an $8 billion, 800-mile pipeline, and they've hit a snag. They've had to reroute some of the pipeline, and now they need to find new deposits. It's the biggest private construction project in American history. Exxon has a lot riding on it. Hildebrand sits back to take this in. He's a laid-back guy with a dry wit and an easy smile. But there's nothing easy about this project, and the timeline is tight. His boss knows what he's thinking. Andy, we've been working on this for almost 7 years. If we don't finish the project and get oil flowing in the next few months, we stand to lose $500 million in tax write-offs. We need you to find our oil. Hildebrand pictures himself in Alaska. He's always wanted to go. And just like that, he recovers his stride. Sounds like I need to buy myself a good coat. When do I leave? In Alaska, Hildebrand searches for oil deposits using a system that works sort of like sonar. He detonates explosions to send sound waves deep into the earth, then analyzes the reverberations as they bounce back. Using rudimentary computers and his own data-crunching algorithm, he plots those sound waves on a two-dimensional map of hills and valleys. He studies the map, looking for a particular inconsistency that tells him, bingo, oil. It's sound and math, his two areas of expertise. Hildebrand works around the clock to find deposits. And, right on schedule, the oil's flowing towards the port of Valdez. Exxon gets its write-off. But something dawns on Hildebrand. If he's smart enough to save Exxon $500 million, he's smart enough to go into business for himself. In 1979, Hildebrand quits his job and founds a software development company called Landmark Graphics Corp., catering to the energy industry. By the 1980s, computers are becoming smarter, faster, more capable of handling complex geophysical information. Hildebrand capitalizes on this, creating an integrated software and hardware platform that can render maps of underground geography using sonic data. It's the same principle he used in his seismic data work with Exxon, but now he's innovated a software program that will make three-dimensional underground maps for the geophysical industry. This is a massive step forward for the energy business, and his system becomes the industry standard for geological surveying. The innovation is a vast improvement over the Exxon program, and its effectiveness does not go unnoticed by oil-hungry energy companies. In 1989, Hildebrand's able to sell Landmark to Halliburton, former Vice President Dick Cheney's massive oil conglomerate, for $525 million. Now Hildebrand's got money, which means freedom. He also has a system for filtering sound through data-crunching algorithms to reveal the inconsistencies of a sonic terrain. And those advances aren't going to remain confined to crude oil. Still in his early 40s, Hildebrand retires. He returns to his first love, classical music, enrolling in Rice University's Shepherd School of Music to study composition. But at Rice, he quickly runs into a problem. Every day, he has to use sampling synthesizers, keyboards that are programmed with loops of different instrument sounds. And he can't stand them. One day, Hildebrand's frustration peaks right as a fellow composition student drops by. Listen to this. How can I write with this? If he needed to score a film scene of an alien giving birth, it would be perfectly appropriate. Unfortunately, he is not. The problem is that the loops are extremely limited, and the more instruments you bring in, the more unrealistic everything sounds. The timbre and tone are awful. The sustain has all the delicacy of a stuck car horn. Hildebrand looks at his friend, and suddenly his face relaxes. You know, I think I can fix this. What would you say if I told you I could create an algorithm that makes a string section actually sound like a string section?
Well, first I'd say, forget it. No computer's powerful enough for that. But then I'd say, hell, there's a fortune to be made, so go for it. Hildebrand doesn't need another fortune, but he does need a new challenge. As much as he loves music, studying composition was never going to satisfy his inventive urge. But combining computer math with music makes perfect sense. Within a year, Hildebrand founds Antares Audio Technologies, a company dedicated to creating digital signal processing products for the music business. Out of the gate, he makes good on the idea he floated that afternoon at Rice. He's able to build on the data compressing algorithms he developed in the oil field. His technology makes the digital information contained in the samples easily digestible by a computer, without losing any of the quality of the recording. His platform comes with a pre-programmed library of instrument samples and allows users to record their own. He calls the new software Infinity, and musicians are all over it. It's 1990 in Scotts Valley, California. Not long after Infinity launches, Hildebrand meets with his business advisor in a local bar to catch up. His advisor can't get over how well Infinity is doing. "I think we're going to put the LA Philharmonic out of the studio business." It's not far from the truth. Infinity instantly revolutionized film soundtrack recording, allowing a composer to create a movie score without the time and expense of using an actual orchestra. The Los Angeles Philharmonic has taken a big financial hit, losing studio dates right and left. But his advisor stops Hildebrand from ordering champagne. "There's something we didn't anticipate. Because people can record their own samples using Infinity, and we have no copyright over those recordings, that means they can also sell their samples out in the world." In other words, Hildebrand doesn't need to hear anymore. It's already clicked. No one needs to buy the software anymore. They can just buy pre-made samples. Ah, how did I not think of that? It's just too good. It's like the Jesus thing. You've taught them to fish, so now they can do it themselves. But as always, Hildebrand recovers easily. He decides the Infinity debacle is no reason to get discouraged. Antares is a small business, nestled in the Redwoods in Scotts Valley, California, just a few miles north of Santa Cruz. They've got a very low overhead, and not enough employees to field a company softball team. Three, in fact. As far as Hildebrand is concerned, the plan is to make the next major software program for the music business. The only thing he doesn't know is what that's going to be. Businesses have to be flexible this year, from working remotely to pivoting their business models for long-term survival and growth. I mean, just think about the cities that have shut down entire lanes of traffic to accommodate safer outdoor dining. If you're in charge of hiring for your business, these pivots have made your job even more challenging, especially if you have to hire for brand new roles. Thankfully, there's one place that you can always count on to make hiring faster and easier, ZipRecruiter.com/AI. When you post a job on ZipRecruiter, it gets sent out to over 100 top job boards with one click. Then, ZipRecruiter's powerful technology finds people with the right skills and experience for your job and actively invites them to apply. It's no wonder that 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. See for yourself, right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/AI. That's ZipRecruiter.com/AI. Let ZipRecruiter take hiring off your plate so you can focus on growing your business. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/AI. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/Wondery. Code Wondery.
It's October 1995. The Audio Engineering Society convention is in full swing in New York City. It's the twice-yearly gathering of scientists, engineers, programmers, and anyone else in the audio technical world from around the planet. That includes Andy Hildebrand. This afternoon, he's having lunch with two of his partners, a business colleague and the man's wife. She's a singer, blowing cigarette smoke and tuning out her husband's shop talk. So did any of you guys catch the lecture about the effects of nonlinearity on transfer function measurements? I was on the edge of my seat. Apparently, exponential sweeps provide distinctive localized artifacts in the impulse response. But in the linear sweep, the effects are spread out. Hildebrand is distracted. He's been hoping to collect ideas for his company's next innovation. And so far, the conference has turned up nothing. As soon as he can, he cuts his partner off. Seriously, guys, we need to stay focused. What's our next project? What needs to be invented? That's when the singer speaks for the first time since they sat down to lunch. Why don't you make me some kind of box that will make me sing in tune? Everyone goes back to their sandwiches. To them, it's a singer's silly fantasy. Hildebrand takes a bite of his turkey club and lets the idea drift to the very back of his mind. For the next 8 months, that's where it stays. Until he starts thinking about that year's NAMM convention, the National Association of Music Merchants. It's the yearly get-together for thousands of industry players to sell their latest products, and Hildebrand has nothing to promote. But what about that pitch-correcting software idea? When he looks into it, he quickly finds that he wouldn't be the first to take a swing at it. But no one has been able to develop an algorithm that could crunch the millions of operations needed to make it work. And without that algorithm, you'd need a supercomputer, the kind with a cape and the ability to fly. But Hildebrand has experience compressing data just like this from his oil hunting days. He already knows how to sonically map the hills and valleys of underground terrain and locate inconsistencies. Maybe he can use the same approach to detect the ups and downs of a vocal note to locate flaws in pitch, and then automatically correct them. So, where so many others had failed, Hildebrand succeeds. King of the laid-back thinkers, he actually does most of the mental heavy lifting while laying in bed. It's the only room in the house to escape the noise of his kids. And the whole revolutionary innovation, the technical feat that experts claimed could not be done, it only takes him a month. He calls it Auto-Tune. So, how does Auto-Tune actually work? Well, here's Charlie Puth singing the song Attention without Auto-Tune.
You run around, run around, run around, throwing that dirt all on my name.
And here he is singing with it. Whenever he sings something that isn't in pitch, Auto-Tune gently nudges his voice back in the right direction.
You've been running around, running around, running around, throwing that dirt all on my name.
And what's magical about Auto-Tune is that it changes the pitch without speeding it up. Remember the chipmunks? Using Auto-Tune, the tone remains the same, so the singer still sounds like himself. It's January 1996. The NAMM show is in high gear when Hildebrand arrives with his new plugin. On the way down to the event in Anaheim, California, he's been humming a Mozart flute concerto and thinking about his invention. He's hoping it'll get a better reception than it did at lunch a year ago when the idea was met with polite laughter. It does. Buzz immediately attracts music producers over to Hildebrand's booth. Does it actually work, they want to know? If I have a singer who's off-key, this will fix the problem without making her sound like some robot from Star Wars? Hildebrand is surrounded. No one will even notice you're using it. All they'll hear is a voice in perfect pitch. But how, they want to know. How does it work? Hildebrand's been anticipating this question. There's no way he can explain it to a non-scientist. It's magic. The explanation is good enough for the producers. People are literally grabbing Auto-Tune from Hildebrand's hands. The recording industry and Hildebrand's life are about to change forever. Auto-Tune may have excited some musicians, but it was the producers and studios that really saw it as a godsend. Throughout the history of recording, if a singer was even slightly off, manually fixing a flat or a sharp line was a laborious job. An engineer would use tape from dozens of vocal passes and meticulously slice them together to form an acceptable performance. Days of budget-breaking studio time could be eaten up in the process. And asking an artist to do those endless takes was a major creative gamble. The first take is often the best, filled with emotion. But if there are any pitch issues, even in one word, the producer wants a second pass. Now the artist is focusing on the intonation, often at the expense of the natural emotion they had in the initial take. Auto-tune would allow the producer to make the slight fixes necessary and keep that first attempt. Hildebrand's software plugin becomes commercially available in the spring of 1997. Within the next few months, it's virtually mandatory in studios big and small. Producers can book more work and make more money, and artists can greatly reduce their recording time. It's a win-win. But at this point, no one outside of the recording studio world is aware of AutoTune, and producers clinging to their new trade secret want to keep it that way. They have a good reason for that. At this point, we're still in the 90s, not so long after the R&B duo Milli Vanilli won a Grammy for Best New Artist. But while singing their hit, Girl, You Know It's True, at a live show, this happened. After the hard drive skip heard round the world, Milli Vanilli's lip-syncing was outed. The pair were forced to return their Grammy, and the public was suddenly incredibly sensitive to anything that could be perceived as musical fakery. Now, despite the fact that autotune is being used only in slight doses to nudge a word or a line back into pitch, producers are afraid that if the secret gets out, there will be hell to pay. It's become the music industry's most tightly guarded secret. And then comes Cher. The warbly computer vocal effect on the hit Believe is the result of producer Mark Taylor pushing the limits of what autotune can do. When Hildebrand was designing the software, he created a dial that would go from 1 to 10. 10 created the slowest shift in pitch, while the 1 setting created the quickest. At the suggestion of a colleague, almost as an afterthought, Hildebrand added 0, which would create an instantaneous pitch shift. At other settings, autotune still sounds natural, but at 0, the shifts are too dramatic to sound human. It adds a digital, slightly robotic element. That's the sound that Taylor uses on Believe. And it pays off. Autotune gives the vocal a completely new and distinctive hook. The single sells 11 million copies, hits number one in 23 countries, and wins Cher a Grammy. But initially, Taylor refuses to fess up to the real source of the magical effect. He wants to keep it a trade secret. In 1999, he even tells an interviewer the warble was created using an older guitar pedal to recreate a Peter Frampton-like effect. But as Believe dominates the charts and dance floors around the world, it doesn't take long before the cat is out of the bag. Producers begin snatching it up, and the songs they produce with Cher's gimmick flood the airwaves. Autotune, now known as the Cher effect, is in demand in a way Hildebrand could never have anticipated. Artists like Madonna, Radiohead, Britney Spears, and Jennifer Lopez release music drenched in the effect. And one of those artists will inspire the next king of autotune. It's 1999, when an unknown, struggling rapper from Tallahassee, Florida, hears a remix of J-Lo's song, If You Had My Love, on a TV commercial. He loves the sound of the vocals and embarks on a mission to track down the effect. Eventually, he figures out what it is, autotune, and he hunts down a copy of the software from a friend. Now, it's one thing for an artist to use the effect for a chorus on a song or two, but this guy decides to make the sound the foundation of his career, using autotune wall to wall. Ooh, she got me doing the dishes. Anything she wants for some kisses. I'm cooking for when she gets hungry. All she doing is acting like she wants. His given name is Fahim Nijem. He goes by T-Pain. That's his single, I'm Sprung, from his debut album. And he can sing. He's not looking to correct anything or disguise a lack of talent. Quite the opposite. He adopts the Cher effect as a brand. It becomes his signature gimmick, pure and simple. And what was once known exclusively in the recording world is now a household name, like a Twinkie or a Kleenex. It's a thing. T-Pain explained it to NPR in 2014.
Autotune has helped me just create another genre of music, you know, and I think that I've changed the direction of music, I've changed the sound of music, and I think it got as big as it did because it came along when I had better concepts than a lot of stuff that was out at the time.
T-Pain quickly bumps Cher as the face of autotune. In the next 4 years, he releases 3 platinum albums dipped heavily in the effect. His success is so great that in 2009, he partners with Hildebrand's company, Antares, licensing the software to create a mobile app called I Am T-Pain.
Hey, what's up, man? It's your homeboy T-Pain right here, showing you the brand new I Am T-Pain autotune app. I'll let you boy.
Now, anyone with $2.99 and an iPhone can not only sound like T-Pain, but record their own tracks and stream them to Facebook. Other rappers are also jumping on the pitch-shifting bandwagon. In 2007, Snoop Dogg releases the top 10 single, Sexual Eruption. His voice is auto-tuned through most of the song. Lil Wayne is next with his March 2008 single, Lollipop, which lands in the top 100 for 5 solid weeks. The next year, Kanye West drops 808s and Heartbreak, an entire album awash in auto-tune. It debuts at number 1. Critics applaud West's vital experimentation, and Rolling Stone puts it on its list of the 40 most groundbreaking albums of all time. Autotune is firmly entrenched as a hit-making tool. It seems to be everywhere in music. As his invention catches on like wildfire, Hildebrand is happy. He's making money, lots of money. He's laid back as usual, tucked away among the redwoods with his small team at Antares, working on new algorithms for voice processing. But not everyone is laid back about autotune. The backlash cuts to the heart of the question of authenticity in music. And for T-Pain, the backlash gets personal.
Have you ever covered a carpet stain with a rug? Ignored a leaky faucet? Pretended your half-painted living room is supposed to look like that? Well, you're not alone. We've all got unfinished home projects. But there's an easier way. When you download Thumbtack, it's easier to care for your home from top to bottom. Pull out your phone and in just a few steps, you can search, chat, and book highly rated pros right in your neighborhood. Plus, you'll know what to tackle next because Thumbtack is the app that shows you what to do, who to hire, and when. So say goodbye to all those unfinished home projects and say hello to caring for your home the easier way. Download Thumbtack and start a project today.
I need a tasty treat to pick me up that lifts me off my feet.
By 2009, autotune has trickled all the way down from the top 40 to TV ads, like this one from Wendy's. For superstar Jay-Z, it's the last straw. So he takes a public stand.
This is anti-autotune, death of the ringtone. This ain't for iTunes, this ain't for sing-alongs. This is Sinatra at the opera. Bring a blow.
His single, DOA, Death of Autotune, makes his feelings clear. After a decade of robotic pitch shifting, autotune's time in the sun needs to come to an end. It's gone from being a fresh, exciting tool fostering new sounds and creative experimentation, a digital bridge between rapping and singing, to the embodiment of slick, repetitive commercialism. DOA is the catchiest indictment of autotune yet, and for T-Pain, it feels personal. He loses his drive to make music and starts hitting the bottle. He shares his wounded feelings on Sirius XM.
Jay-Z, DOA, Death of Autotune. When it dropped,
I was pissed off. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was mad as hell. I mean, you know, it's my technique. That's what I'm known for. So when I hear depth of that, it's like, wow.
But it doesn't end there. On a jet to the BET Awards, T-Pain is approached by a flight attendant. There's a gentleman who wants to speak with you. He's waiting back in the galley. T-Pain is curious. He unbuckles and makes his way toward the rear of the plane. He sees the man in question. It's Usher. He doesn't return T-Pain's warm greeting. Instead, Usher tells him there's something he needs to say. Something that's been on his mind.
Okay, what's that?
You kind of f***ed up music. Like, completely. T-Pain stands there, speechless, 30,000 feet in the air. It's 2009, at the Los Angeles rehearsal studio of the band Death Cab for Cutie. The Grammys are a month away. The indie group's been nominated for Best Alternative Music Album, but the five members have more than gold-plated statuettes on their minds. They're consumed with autotune, and not in a good way. Singer Ben Gibbard looks at the guys.
I've been thinking about the Grammys. I swear to God, most of the people nominated are using autotune, and the fans don't even realize it. It's really getting disgusting. The thing is destroying the beauty of the human voice. It's making everybody sound the same.
Gibbard isn't just talking about the obvious uses of autotune that turn Cher and T-Pain into robotic alien sound-alikes. That level of use has become an easy target. It's the rampant, subtle studio tweaking that pisses him off. The automatic nudges that make a voice flawless and sterile, sacrificing style and individualism. For the Death Cab members, it's a simple question. How would artists like Bob Dylan, Bruce Springsteen, or Billie Holiday fit into an auto-tuned world? Singers whose voices are built on unique expression. By contemporary biz standards, none of them would have made it through the first round of American Idol. Guitarist Dave Kepper finishes his beer and tosses the can aside.
Maybe we should skip the Grammys. Call it a boycott of the Auto-Tune Awards.
But in the end, the band decides they will attend. They'll use the opportunity to make a statement. They wear blue ribbons pinned to their lapels. Gibbard delivers their message to every reporter he encounters on the red carpet. We want to bring back the blue note. It's how people really sing. As the backlash against autotune gains steam, Andy Hildebrand is anything but riled up. He's about as emotional as a shrug. When reporters ask him if his innovation promotes and enables artistic cheating, he smiles his big grin and says, "My wife wears makeup. Is that cheating?" He still doesn't understand what all the hubbub is about. But then, another artist takes a stand against autotune and forces Hildebrand to finally pay attention. It's 2011. Of all the artists using autotune, T-Pain has forged the strongest link with the software. The artist and Hildebrand's company, Antares, have a symbiotic relationship. Autotune gave T-Pain his distinctive style. The artist licensed his name on an app called I Am T-Pain. It's got 2 million downloads and counting. At $2.99 a pop, that's a lot of easy money. And for the kiddies, there's his T-Pain Autotune toy microphone. But there's trouble on the horizon for the relationship. T-Pain wants a more formal partnership with Hildebrand. He feels his name has become an advertising tool for Antares, and he should have a part of the profits. According to Payne, as his associates call him, Antares refuses. But Antares releases a statement saying, "Neither T-Pain nor his team have ever approached us with this request or any similar request." So T-Pain hooks up with another company, iZotope, to make pitch-changing software called the T-Pain Effect.
What's up, everybody? It's your homeboy T-Pain, chilling, willing to be killing on penicillin. You already know what this is, man. Hey, I'm here to tell you about the T-Pain Effect. Now, let me tell you something. This thing is gonna make music production super duper easy for everybody.
T-Pain also instructs Antares not to use his name, which he's trademarked, or his likeness in any way. Then, in July of 2011, T-Pain sues Antares. The suit claims misappropriation of right of publicity, meaning using T-Pain's name, among other alleged violations. Payne wants over $1 million. At Antares headquarters in Northern California, Andy Hildebrand is in his small office, staring at his computer screen. The place is nothing fancy. A couple of bookcases teeming with crooked volumes, and a desk piled high with papers. The room is dominated by a large-scale replica of a sailing ship. It's all bathed in fluorescent light from the ceiling that hums softly in the key of D.
Hildebrand once checked it with a tuning fork. Hildebrand's attorney comes down the hall. He's come to talk about the lawsuit. He says he's reviewed Mr. Payne's claims. They're ridiculous. His recommendation? They countersue. As usual, Hildebrand is calm and collected. As they talk, he bends a paperclip into the shape of a swan. Well, I trust you. Do we even know if the app deal was good for sales? Are we taking a hit with this lawsuit? As a matter of fact, sales have remained static. Static. Just like Hildebrand's temperament. He flicks the paperclip swan into the trash can as his attorney walks out. Feeling optimistic, the lawsuit won't amount to much. And it doesn't. He never has to appear in court. It's settled with a non-disclosure agreement. In 2016, Dr. Andy Hildebrand has the last laugh. He sells his company and retires to Puerto Rico. The hate keeps on coming, but he can now tune it out from a sun-soaked Caribbean beach. When legendary guitar maker Paul Reed Smith comments that Hildebrand completely destroyed Western music, Hildebrand just smiles. When articles accuse him of having ruined the sanctity of the human voice, he just shrugs. In one of his last interviews before retirement, Hildebrand leans back and folds his hands behind his head. If you're going to complain about autotune, complain about speakers too, and synthesizers, and recording studios. Recording the human voice, in any capacity, is unnatural. In other words, autotune is artificial, but so are countless other studio effects, from echo and reverb to compression and equalization. Yet no one is on the Grammy red carpet shaking their righteous fist at reverb. And making recorded music sound different, weird, and unusual has been a staple of creative production for decades, from Elvis's slapback echo to the Beatles' druggy psychedelia. Which is why artists continue turning to autotune, despite the ongoing backlash. In 2018, Beyoncé and Jay-Z, the man who demanded the death penalty on autotune nearly a decade before, release Ape Shit. The single is swimming in autotune. It makes the annual best-of lists of most media outlets and is heralded as a triumph of autotune in contemporary music. Love it or hate it, Hildebrand's autotune is a phenomenon, an innovation that redefined the music industry. And over two decades since it hit the market, it's transcended fad status. For millions of years, it's still the sound of now. I hope you enjoyed this episode of American Innovations. If you did, please give us a 5-star review and tell your friends to subscribe. We're available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and every major listening app. And you can listen ad-free on Wondery Plus. If you're listening on a smartphone, tap or swipe over the cover art of this podcast. You'll find the episode notes, including some details you may have missed. You'll also find some offers from our sponsors. Please support our show by supporting them. And thank you. American Innovations is hosted by me, Stephen Johnson. For more information about my books on the history of innovation, including my book Wonderland, which has a whole history about musical instrument design, you can check out my website at stephenberlinjohnson.com or follow me at Twitter at Stephen B. Johnson. This episode was written by Peter Gilstrap and edited by Liza Veal. Sound design by Jason Freeman. Produced by Natalie Shisha. Executive produced by Jenny Lauer Beckman and Marshall Louie for Wondery.
You know, if I would have applied myself, I could have gone to the NBA.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. But it's just like, it's been done. You know, I didn't want to, I was like, I don't want to be a follower. Hi, I'm Jason Concepcion.
And I'm Shea Serrano. And we are back. We have a new podcast from Wondery. It's called Six Trophies.
Woo!
And it's the f***ing best.
Each week, Shea Serrano and I are combing through all the NBA storylines, finding the best, most interesting, most compelling stories, and then handing out six pop culture themed trophies for six basketball related activities.
Trophies like the Dominic Toretto, I Live My Life a Quarter Mile at a Time trophy, which is given to someone who made a short-term decision with no regard for future consequence.
Or the Christopher Nolan Tenet trophy, which is given to someone who did something that we didn't understand.
Catalina Wine Mixer trophy. trophy.
Ooh, the Lauryn Hill, you might win some, but you just lost one trophy. And what's more, the NBA playoffs are here, so you want to make Six Trophies your go-to companion podcast through all the craziness. Follow Six Trophies on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.